Welcome to the Fangamer Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff. This is episode 152. This is our game club for Yoshi's Story on the N64. We had a little poll to find out what our next game club is going to be, and the choices were...
Shadows of the Empire. GoldenEye.
GoldenEye and Yoshi's Story. And Yoshi's Story won by...
A good landslide. Bit.
Yeah, very, for very whatever reason.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. So I'm joined by Ben and Charlie, and we got to play Yoshi's Story, was it last week?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got to play it last week, and it was a very unique experience. I had played this game a long time ago, like right when it came out, and I was really excited for it. And kind of like what you were saying, Ben, when we first started talking about doing this episode, this is touted as being the sequel to the great Yoshi's Island.
Yeah, my first note is, it's an alleged Yoshi's Island sequel.
Is that an official thing that they said? Is that something you saw on Nintendo Power?
I feel it may have been.
Yeah, I feel like so.
Like, I feel like there was that expectation existed for a reason in a lot of people.
Well, I mean, aesthetically, it kind of took a bit from that with the flowers and the fact that there's a bunch of Yoshis doing a thing.
Yeah, and the egg throwing mechanic is sort of the same, but a lot worse.
Yeah, it's very different. But it's supposed to be the sequel, and the goal of Yoshi's Island, the game we did not play.
Well, that was a previous game.
A former game club.
Yeah. Well, the goal of that game was to get Mario reunited with Luigi, right?
Yeah.
Baby Mario and Baby Luigi. Now, Yoshi's Story, on the other hand,
The goal
is not really explained. You're supposed to get a tree back, the happy tree.
The super happy tree.
And that innuendo as to what that means will become more clear as we go on. But it does not explain anything in the first level. The first level of this game, you'll actually find yourself stuck at a certain point. If you've never played this game before, you'll find yourself stuck where you have to pound on the ground to get an elephant to fall over because he just blocks your path. And I remember being stuck on that the first time I played it when I was a kid.
Same. And that's as far as I got in the game when I was a kid.
And I got stuck again when I picked it up this time. I completely forgot about that point. And there isn't a help option there that actually tells you what to do.
In this game, there are many floating tutorial blocks. There was not one in this area.
Well, there was one, but it only said, you're going to have to think of something creative.
Oh, cool.
Which good.
Thanks.
Kind of begs the question almost.
But that's not very intuitive by any means.
Okay, now let's set the framing for this, because this is a game that you can see it, like you can see the presentation, and it's very much a game that I feel Nintendo is trying to make for younger children.
Yes.
Like, it's, many people call it a baby game. But there are very weird design choices that sort of contradict that at a certain point.
Such as not explaining controls.
Not explaining controls.
Or
anything.
Yeah. Actually, to be fair, it does explain the controls, or it does explain certain things you can do, such as pounding on the ground. However, you have to pick the right level that has those tutorials in it. Because how this game is laid out, I guess you could say you can pick one level per world.
Yeah.
And after you beat that level, the page turns in this storybook and you go to a new world.
Yeah, it's a very dynamic way to tell the story, I think, and could have been really interesting. However.
So how it would work is, you know, you pick anywhere from one of four levels. Sometimes there's less. And I think you can unlock more levels as you go along.
Yeah, actually by the hearts that you find in levels, those unlock new levels for the next world.
But for some reason, in the first world, on the second level, that's where the tutorials are for the controls.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not an option in the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
Only the first one is. So I'm not sure what the intention behind that was. But that was puzzling.
Yeah, there were many tutorial blocks spread throughout the entire game, most notoriously which for me was one on the very last level. If you chose, like, I think the tower level with all, like, the saws and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was so conveniently placed, or obstructing your jump. And I'm not entirely sure if that was intentional, like it was put there so it was, like, an obstacle. But mostly it just seemed like a really poor design choice and very weird that the last level is still trying to teach you things about the game that you haven't done before.
Yeah. there's a lot of different things in this game that don't really make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like the coins.
Yeah, that just seemed to add up. Like in Yoshi's Island, each stage, like if you perfect a stage, you can like collect all the red coins, collect all the flowers, and have maximum stars. And that'll get you like your score of 100 at the end.
Plus the coins did the normal Mario games thing where if you got 100, you got an extra life.
Yeah, yeah. But so like for Yoshi's Island, the max score was 100. In Yoshi's Story, there's no real max score. But it sort of borrows that, like, at the end of the level, if you got all these things, then, like, you're totaled up. And it reaches the thousands and makes it really complicated and hard to follow.
Maybe it was supposed to appeal to the replay value of this game to kind of see how many points you can collect over time. Because, as we were saying, when you beat one level, it advances you to the next world automatically. And so the fact that you can pick different levels, and when you beat a level, it adds to the story slightly differently than another level. So one level you may be underwater, and the story will, after you beat the level, say something about how the Yoshis went underwater and
The Yoshis broke into somebody's house.
Yeah, let's talk about this. So like, the game is called Yoshi's Story, and the story is not very clear. At least it wasn't for me. I think it's established they have to get a tree back, and you don't know where it is. You don't know why it's gone. You don't know what its importance is. It seems to just have been. It doesn't exist anymore, and now they're trying to find it. And they have no clue as to where it is. They're just proceeding through world after world, killing things that are in their way.
Yeah. And I think the thing with that is, like, it's. Like, the story itself, it's very, like, a children's storybook. So things don't have to be necessarily too consequential.
Right.
Like, the story doesn't have to be anything, like, super defined or, like, huge. It's sort of a waste of the dynamic way that they chose to tell the story.
Yeah.
Because, like, each level you pick has, like, a different story beat. And, like, none of them really say anything about Yoshi or the adventure you're on. They're just kind of, you did that thing you did in this level.
Yeah, it kind of just summarizes what you did, but it doesn't explain anything to kind of further the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think at some point we started joking around about how it'd be a bit more accurate to call this just Yoshi's game. Because the story really wasn't there, but I think it was just supposed to say, this is a story about Yoshi, or Yoshis, or whatever. But,
It's also called Yoshi's Story just because of the storybook aesthetic of the entire game.
Right.
But,
and perhaps we just didn't get the best story. That's the thing about this also, is that you can pretty much assemble your own story.
Yeah.
And I think it summarizes it at a certain point near the end.
Well, once you beat the game, it just tells you all those parts put together. So, like, every time you play, I think what they were touting is, like, the story's different every time you play, and once you get to the end, it's sort of like a Mad Lib where you put it all together and this is your Yoshi's story.
Yeah.
And that can be cool. I just didn't find it very interesting from we found.
Yeah, it didn't feel very creative.
Like, they didn't actually take advantage of this potentially cool thing.
Yeah.
Could have been.
Right.
But I do acknowledge that that method is cool, and they were trying something at least sort of unique, even if they've fell a little short of it.
Well, one thing I don't know if you can change in terms of the story is the ending. How you wind up meeting up with Baby Bowser, who is now returning from Yoshi's Island.
And I didn't know he was going to be in the game until he showed up.
That's just it. But I guess the other thing is, this is Yoshi's story, and it would have been nice to know that there's this bad guy who took the tree.
Mm-hmm.
At least we would know that we're hunting him down or something.
Some additional motivation.
Right.
Like, was there, like, an opening cutscene we didn't watch? Like, if you left it on the title screen, did it go to something that would have said that? Like,
I don't know. And I feel like a real idiot that I don't know.
But at the same time, that's something that should be, like, at the start of the game. Like,
yeah,
we started a brand new file, and nothing said anything of that sort. Like, we were just sort of thrown in.
Right. Maybe we missed it.
But is that necessarily our fault? I don't know.
Well, at the end of every level, it just said that they were getting closer to the tree, pretty much, and the Yoshis got happier.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty much how it always ended.
More things died.
Yeah, there was never really a mentioning of who took the tree, what the tree's importance was. It was just that the Yoshis wanted to be happy.
Now, it sounds very, very simple, and you said a little while ago that it's possibly simple because it was trying to be a kiddie game.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of take issue with that, because what Nintendo game wasn't widely considered a kiddie game at the time?
I agree with you, but I still think, they are quote-unquote kiddie or kid-friendly just because, like, they're imaginative stories that are fun, like, in sort of, like, a Disney movie sort of way. Like, Toy Story 3 is, like, a kid's movie, even though, like, there's still a lot more to be taken there. I feel like they were deliberately trying to make something, like a preschool.
Really, like, soft targeted corners.
Yeah. Which I think detracted from that, actually.
And they actually failed in that regard.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I mean, if that's what they were going for, I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah. So this game has you going through levels sort of inconsequentially. And different than in Yoshi's Island, where you, like, pretty much every enemy on the screen was after you. And, like, there was a reason for you for them to not want to be there anymore. They were obstacles. In Yoshi's Story, they're just kind of things hanging out. Like,
and you're kind of getting in their way.
There aren't many enemies in Yoshi's Story that are intentionally trying to hurt you, or that will intentionally hurt you.
Yeah.
Like, most notably for me was one of the stages, I think, like, in the fourth world or something, where there was just these baby birds flying around.
Yeah.
And, like, they posed so little a threat that they were just there.
Yeah.
And at some point, you get this power-up that you go inside of an egg and you can, like, shoot yourself in random directions. And if you hit one of those birds, like, you kill them and, like, they burn to death. Like,
yeah.
They're suddenly, like, roasted birds.
Yeah, and they just fall off the screen.
It's, like, really, like, I feel like they did a lot to make this game more kid-friendly and more easy. But in turn, didn't fulfill that at all and just made it very, like, morally gray. Like, what are you actually doing?
Yeah, this also could be a time in gaming where that type of morality wasn't really considered. In that it is just the idea of every game is going to have enemies and you need to take down the enemies. But if you are making a game aimed at kids, the idea of enemies, I don't know, I would give it some kind of weight.
Yeah.
It did feel very weird to me. And I think all of us were pretty much at the consensus that the Yoshis seemed to pretty much be in the wrong
yeah.
the entire way through, and that they're just going through and effectively murdering anybody in their path to get this tree that will make them happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you turning to me saying, "What is the cost of happiness?"
How many lives
exactly.
must be sacrificed for one Yoshi's happiness?
So one thing we didn't mention yet was how you beat a level. Mm. And you don't beat a level by getting from point A to point B. No, the entire level is laid out with warp zones, regardless of what the level is, what the world is. It is just a series of paths that all lead back to each other. And how you beat the level is by eating enough fruit.
Mm-hmm. Which I actually think is pretty creative. Like, In as far as, like, 2D platformers go, there aren't many games that are not so linear mm-hmm. in how, like, you complete a stage. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's a point in the game's favor for me.
Mm-hmm. I remember getting really excited, you know, whenever I would get close to beating a level, because it would tell you, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, you're about to beat this thing because you have 5 fruits left.
Although it's pretty stressful when, like, you're really low on health and, like, you're just trying to run to get those last few fruits and, like, it keeps stopping you every level to tell you, like, at every point telling you how many you have left. And it's like, I swear to God, if I close out this dialogue box and I'm, like, suddenly, like, disjointed enough that I'm going to jump into this enemy and die and suddenly have to start from the beginning of the game, which is not something we mentioned yet.
Yeah, exactly. You have 6 lives?
Something like that.
6
yeah.
lives, and that's it. You cannot get...
Yeah,
as far as we know.
A life per Yoshi.
Yeah, you
can't... Because they get kidnapped and taken to the castle.
Right.
To Castlevania.
Right. I'm reading Heidi's notes, because she was going to join us for this podcast, but she had mentioned that some of the mechanics were like Castlevania, and how you can whip the tongue around.
A little bit. Like, sort of, like, Super Castlevania 4, there were, like, some blocks that if you licked them, it would, like, you could cling to them or
yeah.
they'd, like, jump you on top of them, but that's sort of a silly comparison to make.
Yeah, but let's talk about the mechanics in general, because it seems like this game, it borrows the mechanics from Yoshi's Island
mm-hmm.
And
to a certain degree.
To a certain degree, but the additional mechanics that it has didn't really seem very fun to me.
Well, for everyone at home, that was a Charlie's Yoshi impersonation, or the steak burgers we ate earlier are finally getting to him. We're really not sure yet.
But to me, it seems like the most fun I had in this game was with the mechanics that it took from the other game.
Yeah. So basically, if you haven't played Yoshi's Island, it's a 2D platformer game where you can run around and jump on things, and if you hold down A, you can do like a little flutter jump thing that like helps you get extra distance.
Which in Yoshi's Island sounded more like you were trying to whap your arm.
It was a very distinctive sound. But in this one, he's very much straining to do that little flutter jump.
Yeah, instead
this time without an infant on his back.
Every time. Every
yeah,
time
so
he
has
jumped.
Less to be straining himself yeah. for. But, okay, so, yeah, it's a 2D platformer. You do all that, but you also can swallow enemies or things on the screen to collect eggs that you can then shoot at things.
And talk about how the aiming system worked.
In Yoshi's Island, the aiming system, if you pressed R, there would be a cursor that shows up, and it would move up and down on its own at a pretty, like, reasonable speed. Like, there were certain ways that you could do it in Yoshi's Island where, like, it would immediately be pointing up or pointing in a specific direction.
You could move, too,
yeah.
in Yoshi's Island.
Yeah, but in Yoshi's story, you stop in place,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly the cursor appears on screen, and you... You direct the cursor yourself. You tell it where to go. And that seems like a better thing because you have a lot more control over what you're aiming at and everything like that. But it's not because the cursor goes really slow. You can't move while doing it.
And you're probably already used to the previous mechanic.
Yeah. Like, I actually died a few times by, like, thinking I could jump up in the air and, like, target things while still, like, keeping my momentum and, like, directing my jump. But it just didn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
It was really strange.
And so it's kind of funny, I think, that they would borrow so much from this previous game and actually change it and, for what I felt, made it worse.
Yeah, I think that's attributed as well to, like, it wasn't directed by the same person.
Right.
We found out that the game was directed by, I forget his name, but the same person who directed Mario Kart 64 and... Luigi's Mansion. And... I don't know how much of the original team from Yoshi's Island joined up for Yoshi's Story, but, I mean, it all seemed to me to spell out that, like, they were told to sort of make a successor to this game, but none of them were really as involved with that, so they didn't really know how to recapture what made that game good.
Yeah. And, you know, to the director's benefit, Mario Kart 64, I think, is a really fun
yeah.
game.
Yeah.
Luigi's Mansion is
great.
Also great.
Yeah. It's just a real off day, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I remember when I was a kid playing this game, and I had fond memories of playing it,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, I felt very confused because I wanted to like it more than I really did,
mm-hmm.
and I tried to kind of suppress those feelings of, man, this game's actually giving me a headache right now. Like,
right.
And it actually did, again. You know,
When we were playing.
I
that may have also been because you left a can of paint thinner.
I did. But at any rate, I remember we were talking about the aesthetic of the game. You have a very distinct look in this game.
I actually have a theory about this.
Yeah.
But we can talk about that once we've reached the end of this point of discussion. So yeah, again, it's a storybook aesthetic. Like, it's sort of laid out. Like, each page is each world. And, like, the worlds themselves are sort of, like, I don't know, bookish in sort of a way. Like, I sort of felt that, like, the warp points were, like, these little dudes with numbers on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of felt like that could have been, like, their page number or something. Like, you turn back to page one. Because every time you did, like, there was, like, an effect of, like, a book page.
Okay,
like,
screen transition.
Yeah. And so, like, I thought, like, as far as that goes, it was very clever. And, like, the music in the game is great. Kazumi Totaka is my favorite games composer.
Even though there was only, like, that one song.
Just, I mean, it's...
Thousand
yeah, but that's sort of Totaka's steez, and I think he does that really well.
Oh.
Is reusing a theme in different ways and doing them uniquely each
what
time.
What about that jungle level?
I love that jungle level. The music is so weird and stupid, but it's really good.
The Yoshi's story theme song done with vocals.
Yeah, through grunts.
Grunts.
And then there's like a sewer level with like a hip-hop version.
Yeah.
That is very similar in its strange interpretation of that theme, but I think that just speaks to how versatile Tataka is as a composer, personally. I like it a lot.
So, Ben and I got to play this game, and Heidi also got to play it. Charlie, you took a back seat on this game.
You sat there and laughed.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I don't know how well I've been able to actually play it anyway. I mean, I just, like, the previous day had finished playing Super Mario Bros. 3, like, the regular Nintendo one, and I was just watching this, and I was absolutely, like, floored by the difference in quality as platformers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, from the idea of it, of kiddie games, it feels like Mario Bros. 3 accomplished that way better than this thing did. Because Mario Bros. 3, it has levels, you learn about things, it gives you, it guides you to learn skills.
Mechanics are conveyed to you in a good way.
Exactly.
Although there was one moment in Yoshi's story that I thought they did that, but for the most part, no.
Right, and to some degree, I think the idea of it being one level per world, mm-hmm. and you get to choose the level, kind of worked against that because it can't the game can't know that, all right, they're going to choose this level, so we need to convey this idea to where they can use it, refine it and use it in more complex things later on.
It felt like each stage had its own thing, and everything you learned in a stage never really mattered past that stage.
Yeah.
With a few exceptions.
Yeah, but usually the quirk of a particular level, of any particular level, never reappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was this stuff of, like, these platforms that you would jump on and you could change their direction on the screen. And sometimes the screen just didn't want to move a certain way. And so it was really trial and error in terms of that mechanic. Like, you just had to kind of hope for the best. And that never appears again, as far as I know, in the game.
Yeah,
it's almost like the game designers kind of got together and split off into different teams and just like, all right, I have an idea for a stage. So they went off and worked on their thing. And another person had an idea for the stage. So they just kind of all made up these different ideas for the for stages and then came together like, all right, now how do we string this together?
Yeah, we'll call it Yoshi's story.
I feel like the game design in general was just like everyone was sleeping. Like, a lot was really bad. Like, the level design itself, I feel like, was just really, like, thrown together, and, like, they didn't feel like cohesive levels sometimes. Like, there were just, like, weird platforming positions. Like, you mentioned the jungle level. It's just a bunch of really weird, like, vines all over the place, and, like, if you get stuck in the water, there's no real easy way to get out of it. And, like, if you're down there, you're pretty much stuck down there because all the platforms are, like, a little bit too high for you to get to. It just seemed like a mess to me.
I really am hesitant to say this just because I think a lot of people are going to draw this comparison with Yoshi's Story, but it really did just kind of feel like a bad trip, like a really bad drug trip.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Well, I mean, like, to the degree of, like, how difficult it can be to play sometimes and how frightening some of the things were on screen.
How inconsistent it is.
Like, we were talking about how this seems like a baby game, and then there's like, this balloon that blows up, and it's, like, the most terrifying face. And that was a surprise to everybody in the room.
Yeah.
Like that's just kind of this weird, inconsistent... I actually just don't know what to call it. It was just very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, it was uncomfortable in, like, the imagery, but it was more so uncomfortable in, like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
Like, this game just had very weird surprises in weird places that you would really never see unless, like, you actively sought them out. And, like, everything just seems, like, really cobbled together and inconsequential and just there for the sake of being, like, hey, we have this stuff. And that sort of ties into my theory on how this game was even made. Okay, so going back to Yoshi's Island, that game was originally being developed as a 3D game, like a pseudo 3D game like Donkey Kong Country. And you can sort of see that in Yoshi's Island too, from like there are certain dungeons where like platforms will fall down and they're in like that like super effects style 3D. There are some platforms that like spin around that are like polygonal. But even like in like the opening cutscene of that game, Yoshi is shown as like a pseudo 3D model. But once you start the game, everything is like this really cool like crayon hand-drawn aesthetic. And they never go back to that except for like a few a few like relics of it. And the story behind that was, like, the game, again, was being originally developed that way. But one day, Shigeru Miyamoto got real mad and just, like, drew, redid everything in, like, this crayon-drawn style. Just because, like Nintendo was making a big push for 3D games. That's what they thought people wanted. And so that's what they wanted to do with this game. When Miyamoto was like, no, this is, like, the console works better with 2D. This is how we're going to do it. And he just sort of put his foot down. And what I feel may have happened is that they had all the assets from the 3D version of Yoshi's Island and just nothing to do with them. So then once the N64 came out, they took those things back and made a game out of those. Because playing Yoshi's Story, that game's not in 3D. Like, it's got like sort of like that pseudo-3D style that actually reminds me a lot more of the intro segment of Yoshi's Island, where like you see like the Yoshis and like the bird flapping and all that stuff. And a part of me wants to think that Yoshi's Story was just them putting those assets to use because they didn't want to waste their time and money.
That would kind of make more sense as to why it feels so disjointed.
Yeah. I mean, I think they definitely did like use that responsibly and make a completely different game around it, because I think a lot of like the, like some levels have really cool design choices. Like there's like this nice like patchwork stuff going on in the background in one level that it looks like you're on the back of some dude's pants. It's a legitimate effort to make a new game, but I think that they had enough from, perhaps this is just a theory, that they had enough from the original Yoshi's Island designs that they just wanted to use it for something.
I really don't know what made them make this game. And I part of me doesn't want to know, because I kind of like looking at it as this weird anomaly on the N64.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about there are tons of weird anomalies on the N64.
Right. You guys want to listen to voicemails?
Sure.
Yeah, I think we, remember, we had this idea where we'd have this contest to see whoever had our favorite voicemail was going to get the copy that we played. We can listen to them all, see who wins.
See who gets the Yoshi Story.
See who doesn't win.
Oh, Yoshi Story. Gotta love that game. Ah, it's the one game. I had it for a long time and playing through it again. My favorite part about it is there's a boss in which there's a marshmallow which you lick it and you cannot get hurt. You cannot die. Literally, it was my favorite boss's in my childhood. And, oh gosh, I am happy to see people getting back to this game, especially with the new release of Yoshi's Yarn or whatever they announced that one. Mm-hmm. And then I just went back and played Yoshi's Island as well, and just Yoshi. I love Yoshi, and I'm glad that they had this Nintendo 64 game. The flower kind of creeps me out of the top left. But aside from that, story's good. The play is tight. So good. Alright, well, I thought I'd share it with you. See you later.
And here's where we start to feel bad and realize that people who left these kind of voicemails probably stopped listening a while ago, because we were saying some pretty severe stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're being pretty hard on this game, but hey,
we gotta be honest. I'm sorry. Yeah.
The thing is, too, that, like, with the exception of Jeff, like, none of us really played it as a kid. And so, like, I think a lot of I hate to, like, draw this card on those people, but, like, a lot of why people may like this game is just because it was a part of them as a child. Like, it means something to them. And I think that's fine. Like,
I mean, the guy brought up an important point, though. I mean, Yoshi.
Yeah, Yoshi.
Yoshi.
I mean, it was
Yoshi.
Yoshi. I mean, who, as a kid, wasn't just fascinated with this little dinosaur in Mario?
Yeah, in Super Mario World, like, when you got Yoshi, it was on.
Yeah, and then Yoshi's Island? Oh,
yeah, dude.
My goodness, all of a sudden you've got Yoshis all over the place. And it's still awesome, and it doesn't detract from the game, except for I guess there's no little Koopas around, so you can't just eat, so the blue Yoshis never get to just fly around.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, it worked out.
Remember when you discovered that? That was nuts.
Yeah.
And I know people who bought Super Mario Galaxy 2 specifically because Yoshi was in it.
I can see that.
Yoshi is awesome.
And you go through the entire game of Mario 64, you get all of the stars just so you can meet Yoshi on the roof.
Meet Yoshi. Yep, exactly. He doesn't do anything.
Yeah, he just gives you a bunch of
lives. He jumps away.
Yeah.
He runs away from you.
But he brought up something that I forgot to mention earlier.
The bosses?
Yeah, in the bosses that I actually really wanted to do a segment for this show where, like, when we were playing, I realized that only specific levels had bosses in them. And I really wondered if the story would have been any different if you had played all the levels with the bosses in order. And I'm not sure if that's even possible. I'm not sure if you, like, every world has a boss. But, like, I thought it would be really interesting to see, like, how that changed, like, my experience playing the game. Because, like, the bosses are just so, like, randomly assorted. Like, you'll play a stage and suddenly there's a boss there. And, like, there's no real indication that there was going to be one or why there is one now once you get there. And I don't know, like, is there, like, an extra stage or something if you play all the boss levels? I don't know. I wanted to find that out.
I also like the boss in which you lick it.
That was a very weird boss.
They certainly... Whenever they bothered to give you a boss, they seemed to be interesting bosses, at least. Or at least that guy was.
Sort of.
I don't know if he's a good boss in the idea that maybe he's actually frightening or difficult or anything, but
you lick him to death.
Hey guys, it's PK Gamer Omega here after sending a message like half a year ago just to say one thing. Now that Barkley showed up and Jem Gaiden is now on Max, it has to be the next game club. It has to be. Come on, guys. It's an amazing game. One of the freaking best ever. And it's ridiculous as crap. You guys have to play it for game club. Okay, that's it for this week. Bye.
No, I don't think this guy's winning a copy of
You know my favorite character in Barkley Shut Up and Jam Gaiden? Yoshi.
Is he? No. I wouldn't have been surprised if Yoshi was in there somewhere.
He's not. I mean, there are chicken fries in it, so I can see why you'd be confused.
Dilbert's in it.
What is this? I don't even...
Thanks.
My thoughts exactly. You know, that's two voicemails where people just started saying something and didn't tell us who they were.
Well, that's a pretty good summation of Yoshi's story, though.
I agree.
I think so. Yeah.
My name's Kevin Chai, and I'm here to say I played Yoshi's Story in a major way. I shared an N64 with my brother. When we got this game, it was like no other. You only had to play one stage in each world, and back then I thought that was just absurd. When a Yoshi died, I'd really fret. It scared me, and I'd always hit reset. You have to use the analog stick to move. I'd rather use the D-pad, and it threw off my groove. I guess what I mean at the end of the day is this game is really okay. That's it for now. See you later.
Oh man, Kevin Chai bringing it home. Take it to the bridge.
Yeah, probably. But I like what Kevin Chai said. I mean, it's just really okay.
It's pretty okay.
We're being hard on Yoshi's Story, but I think it's an okay game.
And there are definitely bad games out there, and this isn't necessarily.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's just very interesting.
When we were talking about the mechanics, we didn't really mention how the mechanics, while they're not unforgiving, like. They're not, at least for me,
it's kind of like he's jumping through butter sometimes. Like, he's real slow.
It definitely had some shortcomings, but it was not nearly as, like, broken of a game as some of the other ones we played.
Hi, I'm Mr. Chris Madd. I guess I would tell my story about Yoshi's Story. it's a very short one. Back when Blockbuster was a thing, when I was a kid, I always picked that game out. I always got glimpses of it. It was that game that eluded you as a kid, and you never really got to actually own. It was very special whenever I got to play it, because it was the few times I got to play it. And even though I probably never got past the second level, it really always gave me a joy when I played it. It was a good game. And I never even beat it.
Fan Gamer Podcast, breaking people's childhood. That's what we do.
That's a nice outsider perspective. Like, I feel like a lot of people who haven't really played this game do sort of hold it in positive regard.
Yeah.
Like, you don't hear a lot of people, like, slamming down on this game. And that's why, like, I was surprised to play it and find it so weird.
I mean, we didn't really have great high expectations going into it. I had already played it.
Mm-hmm.
I had already beaten it a couple times when I was a kid, and you at least had seen some stuff about it before.
Yeah, I played it to a point.
Yeah. Charlie?
I had never really had any experience with it other than thinking it was an interesting idea that I kind of regretted having never actually experienced in the first place.
And you still haven't.
Well, I know. I've actually, now I've actually watched people play it, and I'm a kind of person who can watch somebody play it and feel like I'm playing it myself a good bit. And while I would usually do that and think, I could play this game better than that, you know. This one, I don't know, it just seemed very strange to me, and I was kind of disappointed in what it turned out to be.
Walking through butter.
Walking through butter.
That's a pretty good way to describe the whole game.
All right, and having listened to all those other voicemails, there was one that that stood out a bit. And more importantly, I guess a lot of people wouldn't have known that we were going to end up going through this and talking a lot of smack about Yoshi's Story. But this guy seemed to have anticipated that, and to a large degree, he makes a good counterpoint to a lot of the things that we said. So, Erwin, you're going to be receiving our copy of Yoshi's Story. I'll get in touch with you soon about how you'd like it customized, but
Charlie may even use a Sharpie on it.
Yeah. He may color code it for you.
We're sorry, Kevin Chai. We really liked your rap.
Oh my God! Please leave more rap voicemails, everyone.
But here, listen to this one, and you'll see why we chose it.
This is Erwin, and I'm here to discuss Yoshi's Story. During the last few podcasts leading up to this game club, anytime the game itself is mentioned, I flinched like a child who knows he's in trouble. Perhaps that's because of the near universal opinion of the game against my own, but... You know, before I make my next statement, full disclosure, most people disagree with my positive opinions on a few games. For example, I don't hate Deus Ex Invisible War. Now that that's out of the way, whether for legitimate reasons or nostalgia, Yoshi's Story is one of my favorite games of all time. From the aesthetic, to the music, to the gameplay style, it's just so much better than people seem to think. I'm also going to lose a few people here. I don't really like Yoshi's Island. Yes, the crayon graphics are nice, and it has a warm, bright feeling with plenty of little clever bits of design, but I just couldn't get into it. Feel free to nod knowingly, thinking my taste in games is beyond suspect. Swell. I'm pretty used to it. But that same familiar feeling of criticism runs through every memory I have of the game. If I do have a nostalgic memory, it's lots of enjoyable times playing a game I loved, ending with those closest to me mocking the game and me for liking it. Let me just get the graphics out of the way. I freaking love the pop-up book style. Though some of the game suffers from that pre-rendered sprite look with which Donkey Kong Country cursed the 90s, the rest of the exposed cardboard and patchwork look is just gorgeous, especially on a system that had some pretty horrendous graphics. Even then, some pre-rendered characters like Cloud and Candy, Airbag, and Snorkel Snake don't feel out of place with the overall feel of the game. Yes, yes, cutesy baby crap, I've heard it all. Or perhaps I'm just biased. I so like the pop-up style that the best gift anyone ever gave me was a pop-up version of one of my stories. Maybe I can't help it. The first time I remember experiencing the harsh criticism this game gets was over the graphics. It was on one of many forgotten birthdays back in elementary school. Repressed because they were clearly too fun. We were never wealthy, but this birthday my mom moved our little television into the living room, and I was allowed to have a big sleepover and rent one game. Well, of freaking course I'm going for Yoshi's Story again! I'd rented the game before, so hey-ho, my friends will love this game. Well, they didn't. It was only single-player, but to be fair, I only had one controller. But echoing that much-ridiculed Earthbound review by Video Games and Computer Entertainment, they called it Kitty Barney Crap. The gameplay style didn't help, but I think people go into the game with the wrong expectation. It's not meant to be an epic voyage through 30 worlds of bottomless pits. At heart, it's closer to an arcade game than a Mario-style journey to the final boss. It's a semi-linear puzzle platformer. If you don't care about earning points, it's going to be tough to take a deeper interest in this game. The crux of the game is exploring the levels to earn as many points as possible, hence Miss Warp, the favorite fruits, and Yoshi's Mood. The game offers both single-stage trials and a six-stage challenge mode, also known as Story Mode. Yes, story mode is supposed to be completed in one sitting. The original Japanese version of the game didn't even save story progress. Still, I thought the brevity of the story had a nice little plus to it. If I didn't want to play a game for too long, it was perfect. I could sit down, get a unique level sequence every time, and an hour later the world was saved. My second negative encounter with Yoshi's Story and other people was a few years later. I had visitation with my father, and at the store, I saw the price had been slashed considerably. I could finally afford to buy a copy of my own. I excitedly got my cart and we headed back to his house. As I sat, I went through a story playthrough. My dad just kind of sat there, thinking I was nuts. After I finished, I earnestly asked him what he thought. After dissecting what complexes he thought I had for a few minutes, the rest of my visit he kept mocking my cherished ending theme, Yoshi Talk. To this day, he still will randomly burst out, "Be careful!" in his most off-key rendition possible. Wonderful. And that brings me to the music. Like Super Mario 64, most of the music is made up of the same basic melody done in very different styles, but composer Kazumi Totoka has rather obvious predilection for softer, simpler sounds, like toy pianos, vibes, and ukulele. Like he's gaming's Kuricorder Quartet. The music can be goofy or lovely or some confusing combination of both. Yoshi Standing in the Wind and Jungle Fever immediately come to mind. I'm also a sucker for the music changing with Yoshi's mood and health. That's so unimpressive these days, but it's still a great detail. As much as I love his soundtracks for games like Yoshi's Story and Animal Crossing, I know Totoka's somewhat of an acquired taste. Yes, it's pretty cloying and cutesy at times, but what can I say, so is the rest of the game. And it's not really to the game's detriment. For me. For everyone else I've met, this seems to be where their opinion begins to turn. Once you hear the Yoshi singing, it's all over. Here come the insults. About 9 years after my father's response, my very best friend reacted just as negatively when I started introducing her to game music via Katamari and Hyadine. While she took to those just fine, she just completely lambasted Yoshi's Talk, saying it was painfully off-key and terrible and agonizing, how could you do this to me, and where was the trigger warning? Or at least it felt that way. My heart sank. I know I was being overly sensitive, but by this point, whenever I showed the games to friends or family, or, terrible idea, discussed how I liked it online, doubting, concerned looks were best-case scenario, and for whatever naive reason I expected that to change with time and people. I guess then was when I realized how afraid I was of anything I perceived as an insult to me or the things I enjoy. I was taking events that were actually minor and not the attacks I painted them as to be more than what they were. Those kids weren't good friends, they were just little boys. My dad wasn't psychoanalyzing me and mocking me. He was responding to having to just watch me play a game for an hour by ribbing me about a singing chorus of baby dinosaurs. I can't blame him. And my best friend was just reacting from her taste in music to a song, again, sung by baby dinosaurs with giant noses voiced by a Japanese man with crazy eyebrows. There was just no way I would get through life if I couldn't even take people criticizing games from my childhood. No matter how high my self-esteem was. In strange surprise, my experience with people and this particular cutesy game helped me accept criticism, realize issues with self-esteem, and mature. I'm sure many people deal with these issues, but perhaps not with such an adorable catalyst. If I was lame and liked corny, sentimental stuff like Yoshi's Story, I'd probably say something like, "A page of my life turned and I grew happier." But that sounds really bad when I say it out loud. Thanks.
Thank you, Erwin. So, next week we're going to be going to Golf and Stuff, which is like the only arcade in Tucson. That's going to be our episode.
It's going to be our first arcade trip.
Actually, during that segment, Erwin had said that Yoshi's Story is a lot more like an arcade game.
Right, that's a better way to approach it than
yeah.
as your standard platform.
And I agree with that.
And as we were listening to that, we came up with the idea of, hey, let's go to an arcade next week. So that's what we're going to do.
Don't tell them that, Jeff!
Well, maybe now they'll go meet us there. But if any of our listeners have stories about arcades, or maybe there was an arcade in your town that nobody goes to anymore, or it went out of business, or maybe it's really hopping still.
Yeah.
Go there and check it out and see if you can record a segment and send it to us, because we'd like to hear about the different arcades that are throughout the United States.
Yeah. When I grew up, I used to go to an arcade a lot at, like, the local mall, and it has since shut down, but, like, I have, like, countless stories that I could tell about, like, the people I met there, like, what kind of people were there, just things that happened. And I'm sure there are a lot of people listening who are like that, too. So if you can think of any stories like that, please, like, record yourself, like, make a segment out of it, like Edwin just did. Like, that was great. That was fantastic. Like, he even emailed us with, like, music suggestions to put on with it. Like, he edited it down himself. It was great. Or even if you just want to leave a voicemail, like, telling a quick story or just your opinion on things. Go for
What's
it.
That phone number?
503-446-CAST.
That's
and
right.
What are they? Where would they email their segments if they decide to make them?
charlie@fangamer.com.
Is there something you want to say about people who would be submitting segments? If that's a possible thing they want to do?
And if you'd like to start helping us out, helping out the Fangamer podcast semi-professionally, I do have a topic in our forum with sort of an application process. If you'd like to make segments semi-regularly, help us to come up with topic ideas, and get paid for your work.
You guys can check out the forum at fangamer.com and click on community, and that'll take you straight to our forum, and you can check out that topic there.
Make that sweet Fangamer cheddar.
That's right. Making fat stacks. All right, well, we got one last voicemail from a real turd.
Our good friend, Mustin.
All right, let's see what he has to say.
Hi, Fangamer Podcast. This is Mustin. I'm driving home from my just seeing Lucio Baltimero and Reggae Ram and the One-Ups perform. And just listen to your podcast, and I'm furious. I want to talk about some stuff. Number one, don't pick this as your favorite voicemail. I hate Yoshi's Story. That game was the loneliest, saddest, depressing game I've ever played. As far as I'm concerned, the only thing we got from it is the Yoshi pooping sound that we keep using. And the rest of it is, I don't know. I wouldn't wish that upon anyone. Please don't play that game. I know you're doing it as a game club, and that's cool, but although there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be sad. Number two, you didn't talk about a lot of the cool technical stuff. You touched on in the very end.
Oh, talking about N64. But, I mean,
we talked about the four controller ports, and of course that was revolutionary and amazing. The expansion pack, man, the fact that you could actually put RAM into your system and make it better, that was amazing. And, I mean, it only worked in a couple of games. One of those games is Jet Force Gemini, one of the best Nintendo 64 games ever.
Yeah.
Not mentioned in your Nintendo 64 podcast.
No.
Why?
Because Game Club.
I don't know. But anyway, I'm going to talk about it because it's awesome.
Go for it.
Jet Force Gemini, jam. Of course, Rare, man, so poopy. And you made the same game every time. Beat the game. You thought you beat your boss. You didn't beat the boss. You got to go back and collect everything, and then once you collect everything, you can go fight the boss. Never beat any Rare game on the Nintendo 64 because of that, because they're all the same. Very frustrating. Don't do that anymore. Anyway, Jet Force Gemini is awesome, and so you have to go back and get all the tribals, which is very cute. They named Ewoks tribals. Anyway,
quite ants in that.
Another
game.
Technical thing that was cool, the music. Like, it was the first system that, mainstream console that allowed for, like, filtering and added levels of music whenever you were in the water level of Mario 64. Mm. You're swimming around, and it's all good. And then you get on land, and the drums fade in. Or when you're playing Conker's Bad Fur Day, another awesome game, a Rare game. But, you know, like, there was, like, filtering in the music in real time and stuff. It was very, very awesome, like, technological stuff that happened with that. Another thing was, like, two controllers. Like, one time, of course, I think the most, like, influential game that came from that is probably GoldenEye. I gotta say it. You know, it's whatever. A lot of people made a lot of friends in college, you know, opening the door to the dorm and, hey, I got GoldenEye, you wanna play? You know, but, one time, some friends and I got some, we're going to call it Fun Dip, and they left to go get more Fun Dip, and I had some Fun Dip, and I didn't think it was really doing anything, and before I knew it, I had cleaned the entire apartment, picked up a Lazy Boy chair, put it in front of the TV, and I was playing GoldenEye with two controllers. That was very innovative, and I don't think anybody else has done that since, using two controllers, but that was the way to play GoldenEye, having two controllers, and having one in each hand, and killing people. And don't do drugs. You know, stay in school. Don't do drugs. I never did Fun Dip again. And I learned a valuable lesson. And number three, what is number three? What else are we going to talk about? Some of the Nintendo 64 stuff? I love that Nintendo 64. I loved it so much that I moved my birthday from March to September launch. My high school was really close to our university, and I went to the university lab and printed out all the pictures. Remember like Final Fantasy VI? When they did like Locke and Celeste and Terra, and it was going to be 3D and stuff? That's the other technical thing y'all didn't talk about. Mm. The secret handshake between Sony and Nintendo behind closed doors as they worked together to create a new system. But Sony said, hey, the future is in CDs. And Nintendo said, no, we're stubborn like a mule. And so Sony said, okay, peace. It's because of Nintendo that the freaking PlayStation exists. Because they went on to go ahead and say, well, we're going to do our own thing. And they made the Sony PlayStation. And Nintendo stuck to the cartridges. Very interesting history there. Which a lot of people know, but if you didn't know that, now you know, and no one's half the battle, G.I. Joe.
Thank you.
So, I don't know. I probably missed out some other stuff because I was... Oh, yeah, Mario Kart, Ben. Dadgummit. Super Mario Kart is the best game.
No.
Mario Kart 64 stinks. And if you don't agree with me, just look at the Mario Rainbow Road. Rainbow Road, man. Listen to the music in Rainbow Road and Mario 64. I know there's that stupid song and everything, and everybody's like, it's a road, it's a rig. I don't care.
That's GameCube, dumb song. That's GameCube.
But the actual, like, Super Nintendo one, it's, like, so driving, and you want to, like, win.
It is.
I don't know. I could beat anybody in Super Mario Kart. I will beat anybody in Super Mario Kart, except for my friend.
Super Mario Kart.
Who's the best in the world at it, but Advanced otherwise, Rainbow. Challenge me. Bring it. I'm like Prince of basketball over here with Super Mario Karts. Just let me be Koopa Troopa. And I will,
yo,
nope. I will smoke them.
Nope, I'm Cooper Troopa.
I'll smoke them with fun dip. Oh, hey, I love the podcast. I love that I get to listen and be upset with you all when you forget things, and I can call in, and then I can tell you about the things you forgot about. I love you guys and girl, which, you know, keep on doing what you're doing. I'm very sorry for everybody who's about to play Yoshi's Story or who has already played it. It's not my fault. I didn't have anything to do with that. But keep on rocking, okay? Fan gamer. It's a cool place to be. Love you, bye.
Thank you, first Mustin. Of all, Mustin, I said that bad thing about Super Mario Kart not being a good game, that Soya Oka, my girl, and that soundtrack is what's up forever. I don't disagree there. That's a bad video game. Boom. Eat it.
I like it personally.
Well, you're dumb.
We got to get you back on the podcast, Mustin. A little bit of Fangamer news. Glitch Week is over. It is over. So you can no longer buy glitched merchandise.
I ruined it.
You ruined glitched merchandise?
I did.
How'd you do that?
Because everything's covered in watermelon juice now.
That's true.
It's real gross in the office.
Did we have that video online?
No.
Okay. Well, if any of you would like to check out Ben in a video that we made at the office here, in which he chucks a watermelon at some Fangamer products. It's pretty good.
I think it's pretty good.
Go to Fangamer, go to youtube.com/Fangamernet, and you can check out that video. I believe it's called Damaged Goods.
Yeah, there's also one featuring Rockstar and Max that wasn't up yet.
Yes, in which they talk about getting their hair all over fresh clothes.
Yeah.
Other news, we're packing up for PAX. That's our big deal right now. We're trying to catch up on orders as fast as possible, but PAX has been our priority, so...
Yeah, if you're going to PAX, hang out, man. Come to the booth. Say hi to people. I won't be there, but it doesn't matter, because Jeff, Charlie, both of y'all?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be there.
You'll get to meet Jeff.
You can meet me. You got to come up to me and say, hey, are you that guy? And I'd be like, okay. I am that guy. I don't know who you are. You guys don't send me pictures of you, and if you did, that'd be creepy.
No, not necessarily. They could Snapchat you.
What's that?
Don't worry about it. Yo, what up, Snapchat? Anyway, come introduce yourself to people at PAX. Buy some shirts.
Yeah.
Play the Cray Machine game. Michael will be there.
That's right. Michael Ferguson will be there. Can we get a wow?
Wow!
Wow!
It'll be a good time. PAX is a good time.
A lot of other people are going to be there, too. Reed Young will not be there. So if you're hoping to show up and stroke his beautiful, beautiful hair, you're out of luck.
Well, now no one's going to go.
I know.
Way to say that.
But there is still the PAX Pokemon League that's going to be there, and I'm going to be one of the gym leaders. So you got that.
Also, Laura M. Wilson.
Yeah, Laura is also a gym leader, so you'll be able to challenge the both of us. And usually later in the day, you'll probably find us in the handheld lounge. Earlier in the day, we're going to be at the Fangir booth and working, so don't ask us the Pokemans at the time.
I know that for people out there who are going, watch PAX, because everybody listens to this podcast and is like, you know, I have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah.
We're talking about the Penny Arcade Expo, and this particular one is in Boston. This is the East Coast one. So if you have a ticket, and I'm assuming you have to at this point, because they're gone. Charlie, didn't you just give away a pass?
Yeah, I think so.
On our Facebook group?
Mm-hmm. Should have been a podcast prize.
Should have been a podcast prize.
Too bad.
Way to charf it.
Well, I mean, we'd have had done that earlier, because, you know how we are with podcasts.
Yeah.
Well, at any rate, it's a good reason to go check out the thing in our Facebook group and like that, because we give away some pretty neat little things.
Every once in a while.
You might get a sticky watermelon juice-filled Mother 3 handbook.
With cheese on it. Hey, one thing I want to say is I think people should go leave us a review on iTunes.
They should do that.
The last one that was on there was back in October.
Man.
I don't even know if they were talking about us.
Probably not. That's even before War Month, before we even started like this new format. That I think we've been beating it up. We've been killing it.
Yeah, I think we've been doing an okay job. In fact, who knows? Maybe we'll do a. Do we want to give away that handbook right now?
Right now.
Right now.
To the best iTunes review.
To the best iTunes review, and it doesn't even have to be like these guys are great. You can just leave.
You can write us one star.
Yeah.
If you give us a really good feedback, then that's enough.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Just give us feedback. Okay, so best feedback we can get on iTunes as a review. It could be one star. It could be no stars. Is that an option? No stars on iTunes?
I think one star is the lowest.
1 to 5 stars?
Please don't do that, though. If you're trying to be funny, please don't rate us one star.
That's true. I think that'll ruin us. We'll get canceled.
Yeah, we'll get... We won't
be, my friend will come renewed. In here with a shotgun.
Yeah, they'll just burn this cancel, sound to the ground.
He'll cancel us all.
Yeah. We won't get renewed.
So we'll announce who won the handbook for the iTunes review in April sometime. I'm assuming we'll also post it on our forum, so go check that out.
And again,
once we decide on what the details are.
Yeah, again, the prize is a book that I threw a fruit at and then, like, ripped on the ground.
That's true.
And then laughed at and dropped.
Watermelon!
So...
Ben will sign it, too.
I will. I mean, it's already signed in, like, a mixture of watermelon juice and my saliva, so, like, it's got a part of me in it. It's gonna be real good. You want it, right?
It's got real creepy real fast.
Yes, it did.
Real good.
I don't know how much of that I'm leaving in.
Well, we'll post the video in the description and people can see it. So you can win that watermelon.
Yeah, that watermelon. It's pretty much a watermelon now.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Game Club closing thoughts. Is Yoshi's Story a classic game?
No.
I don't think so.
Would you play it again?
Okay, I'll say this. No, it's not a classic game. I would play it again.
You would play it again?
Because I played it as a kid. I didn't get to say this earlier.
No, the question was, have you played it again? Like, would you play it again?
I think so.
Okay.
I didn't get to say this earlier, but, you know, I was a kid when I played it, and it gave me headaches. Uh-huh. It was not a fun experience sometimes, but
maybe
I did have
paint thinner open then, too.
But I did have fond memories occasionally with it, and would I play it again? Yeah, maybe in about 20 years. Because it was about 20 years ago and I played it the first time. So
it hasn't been out for 20 years. That's okay.
It feels like it. And what's our third question about game clubs?
Well, would you recommend it to others?
Well, would you play it again?
Would I play it again? I wouldn't play it. I don't think I'm going to play it.
Well, would you play it at all? Is the question.
Probably not going to play it.
Probably not going to play it? No. I'm going to say yes. I would play it again. I would play it again as recent as yesterday. Because I really wanted to do that segment.
It definitely has some replay value.
Yeah.
But I have better things to play, I'm sorry.
Like, I definitely have better things to play, but I'm also justifying playing an 80-hour game, like, again, right after I did, that being Persona 4. So, I waste my time enough already. Like, I'm pretty down with spending a little more time in Yoshi's Story, seeing, like, if there's something we missed. Because I feel like I didn't get the true experience of that game for some reason. So, I would be down to play it again. And, of course, our last question of the triple triad of questions is, would you recommend it to somebody else?
I'd recommend it to Mustin.
Okay, so no. Charlie?
No, I don't think so.
Like, no kids you would recommend this game to?
No, if I met a kid who wants to play a game, a cool game with Yoshi, I'm going to say, hey, play Mario World. Play Yoshi's Island.
Like a four-year-old, though.
Yes, or exactly. Preschooler. I first played Mario Brothers 3 whenever I was I was 4 years old, because mm-hmm. that's whenever I got the thing.
Yeah.
And I was bad at it, but I liked it a lot, and mm-hmm. Never mind, I'm not going to go into too many stories, but I think...
Did you poop on the controller? Like, what?
No.
I don't know, you seem really apprehensive about telling the story all of a sudden. So
no. It's embarrassing. I think someday I'm going to tell a story, but anyway, okay. It's not now. But suffice to say that I think I enjoyed Mario more than I would have enjoyed Yoshi's story.
Mm-hmm. I agree. There are better Yoshi games to play. I don't think I would outright recommend it to anybody. Like, if someone, like, I would recommend it to people for, like scholarly reasons. Like,
this exists kind of a reason?
Yeah, like, see, this is something you can study.
Wrong here?
Yeah, and not necessarily what went wrong, but I think it's a really interesting game. It's very weird, very peculiar, and I think there's a lot you could take from it. Like, as far as just, like, game design, what not to do. But also, there's a lot of interesting stuff in it, and I think there's something to take from it, even if it's not necessarily a fun game that everyone should play.
Yes.
You would?
No, I'm just saying yes. Oh. I agree with all that. Like, that is the only reason I would ever recommend it to somebody would be, this is a thing that exists.
It's very interesting.
It's interesting, and it obviously, it captivated all of us.
Mm-hmm.
It was very interesting, if only for that reason. I hope our next game club is with a better game, though. I really do.
I mean, you're the one who was excited for a short game.
I was. And then, you know, we got to the end quite a few times, and we kept dying.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I said, Ben, take over. I'm going to go paint.
I was the AD of this Game Center CX situation. I was Inoko Max.
Yeah, and you were the one who beat it.
I was. I did it.
Yeah.
I was offered the controller a few times, but I decided I turned it down.
You were playing a good game. You were playing Fire Emblem at the time, which I still need to play. Speaking of good games.
Yeah. Any other closing thoughts, you guys?
Man, I wonder how good Yoshi's Island 2 for the DS is. Because they made one of those.
They did?
Yeah. It was made by a different team completely, but it was like more directly a sequel to Yoshi's Island. Apparently not very good, but I want to see how that compares to Yoshi's Story. Like, the direct sequel approach to like a spiritual successor approach.
That is a good point. I mean, I'm not going to do it.
Myself, no, yeah.
But, that is an interesting way of approaching playing another game that people don't seem to be all that interested in.
If any of you guys played Yoshi's Island 2 for the DS, leave a voicemail about it. 503-446-CAST.
I wonder what Yoshi's Yarn is like, if that's a pretty good sequel to Yoshi's Story. Because it looks like the same deal.
There are very borrowed mechanics, or borrowed aesthetics, but
has that come out yet?
No, not yet.
Okay.
They just released it, or announced it at a Nintendo Direct, I think.
Well, we'll find out soon, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, next week we're going to be doing our arcade episode, and we'll be talking about the different games that are there. And Ben, what are you looking forward to with that episode?
I'm looking forward to see what kind of games are there and sort of what kind of arcade it is. Because, mm-hmm. like, I think at a certain point, arcades shifted a lot toward, like, taking your quarters to serve you tickets, which you can then, like, the whole Chuck E. Cheese.
Rolls. Yeah.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's that kind of arcade, if it's a bit more focused on, like, fun games to play. Just sort of stuff like that. I'm interested in seeing, like, the modern state of an arcade that is attached to something bigger, like a mini golf place.
Yeah. So we'll do a little bit of investigative journalism with that episode, and if any of you listening would like to contribute to that, feel free to send us a voicemail or a segment, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Later.
Yoshi!